Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to another riveting episode of the Burden of Leadership podcast with my two guys.
Vonnie.
Hi, Vonnie.
And Tamian.
Hi, Tamian. Good to see you guys. I'm Paul. I get to serve as the mayor of Sioux Falls. I get to hang out with these guys a lot, and we end up riffing on leadership a lot. And a lot of times we're talking about principles of leadership and communication and community building and all stuff, but leaders can only lead if they're first taking care of themselves. I know I've heard you guys say the hardest person to lead is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is taking care of your mind, your body, your spiritual life.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time on that. So we're going to riff on that a little bit today, talking about how we take care of ourselves. And I'll start with this because I'm 45. You're about
44, right behind 44, you.
Just a kid.
42.
Just a baby. Just a boy. Yeah, so I'm the old man here.
Old guy.
Yeah. But I tell you, when I hit 40 specifically, when I got into my 40s, my body started to change. I mean, everything hurt more. Sleep was worse. I was more sore when I get out of bed. I just noticeably could tell that I was slowing down. And what would happen would be I would be more fatigued at work. I would be more fatigued when I got home. And I'm not trying to get in the, you know, the low T discussion and testosterone shots and all this stuff, but men, women, everybody, our bodies change as we age. So I've had to figure out, okay, in my job, which is pretty intense and stressful, how do I take care of myself so that I can show up as the best version of myself every day? And I've learned that a few things have really stood out for me. One is sleep. I never really valued sleep until the last 4 or 5 years. And the value of sleep and recovery, we're going to talk about that, because it wasn't long ago Bonnie and I ran into each other at the sleep mattress store. Because we're like,
they were running those numbers up.
I'm like, what are you doing here? I'm like, my sleep is garbage. He's like, me too. And I think I walked out of there, spent a lot of money.
A lot of money, man.
Sleep. Second thing for me has been finding my spiritual devotional life again. And what I mean by that is, again, it's easy to let that slip, but meditation, just spending time in prayer, however you, you know, quiet time. And then the third is dialing in your physical health. You know, like what works for you. You know, I know you box. I like to run, and I like to lift and do some of these other things. So so we're gonna talk about that.
Yeah.
So kick that off for us, man.
Yeah, me. Part of my process is a couple of things. Is one of the biggest ones was telling myself or to stop telling myself that there's certain things I was or I wasn't or I did or I didn't. Like, I'm not a morning person. What does that even mean? You know what I mean? Like, and that piece of it. So now I'm up pretty early, whereas before I would have told you I don't get up early. Valuing sleep, those type of things. Dragging myself into the bed instead of falling asleep on the couch and doing all those little things. We talked about, you know, my journey right now with food in terms of getting my nutrition. Right, shout out to Annie Mello, the folks who are helping me do that. The biggest change for me, and I'll just start it with Through This Lens, is honestly the investment that I've made in it, both in terms of time and energy and all of that. But for me, I just decided, especially if I had more access to resources as far as that group, is that I try to spend all my money on things that I love, especially the things that love me back. And so for me, when I box, that loves me back. It keeps me in shape and healthy. When I give time and energy to my community, that loves me back. That gives me, you know, power and fuel mentally and emotionally. You know what I mean? So I just really have been trying to invest in the things that I love that love me back. And sometimes we don't love the things that love us back. You know what I mean? We put a lot of investment in things that we can't possibly control or get what we need to get out of it. And so for me, in terms of boxing, food, travel, investments in things in the community, all of those things that do something for me, that was the biggest change in how I approached my wellness, was so, where I made investment.
So if you had one thing to choose to say, physically, one sport, one exercise, for you it'd be boxing.
Yeah, for me it'd be boxing all day, because it's a thinking man sport. So for me with boxing, it's
why I'm bad at it.
Yeah. Well, and it's there's something primal about it, which is really important for me. I think sometimes we're over-civilized in the sense that I think tapping into the primal nature of things allows you to appreciate how civil people are. You know what I mean? When you think about the fact that no one has to use their words. Mm-hmm. No one has to dialogue if they don't want to. The fact that people do a lot and mostly is a pretty big deal. And when people start taking that for granted, they don't appreciate that. So I like sometimes just to get in there and exchange some energy with another human being and realize, like, you're not the only person on the planet that could do whatever, and you should be mindful of other folks. How it taxes your mind thinking under pressure, where when you think wrong, there's a consequence for it.
Yeah.
There's no greater metaphor for me for life. And developing poise and calm in that space allows me to develop poise and calm in other things. Because in this meeting, nobody's punching me in my face. No one's going to die. No one's going to, you know what I mean?
Hopefully.
Like, so what, I would be falling apart. Right. Right. I
mean, if they do, right. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, that's exactly it. And the last thing I'll say about boxing in particular is why I think young people should participate in, why football and combat sports, I think, is so important, is because we often want people to be responsible with a power we never taught them they had. You know what I mean? For most cases, as you grow up, people de-incentivize your power. Sit down, be quiet. Do it because I said so. I pay you, blah, blah, blah. So in almost every realm of people's lives, we tell them that they don't have power. And then we want them to be responsible for it. You know, and I think letting people know the power that they have gives them the connection to what they could do with it to help or to harm. And the more secure a person is in their ability to take care of themselves, protect themselves, and that they're safe, makes it more likely that they'll extend that safety to other people.
So Tamien, we were talking before we started, you're so dialed in that you shower to a specific song, you step in the shower when the beat drops on a song. Like, you seem regimented, like dialed in with your body, mind, soul routine right now. What does that look like for you?
Well, it was a process. I mean, there's a couple of things that really kind of stood out, I think, as I was entering into my 40s. You know, number one, in this grind culture, I find it funny that people will sacrifice their health to grind, to make more money, only to have money at the end of their life to spend all the money to get more health.
Yeah.
How can I be smart about this on the front end? And one thing that really stood out to me when I read Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, it said that, you know, this is Napoleon Hill who studied the lives of 500 of the most successful entrepreneurs, men and women, over a 25-year period of time. And the average age when they started the career that made them that level of success was in their early 40s. And so I was like, what's to that, right? And you hear the statements, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. So again, I was one, as Bonnie said earlier, I always told myself, I'm not a morning person. What is that? That's just an excuse not to get up. And, oh, that's not who I am. Everything's a decision, right? And so over the last, I would even say, I've developed myself into a very disciplined person. I had a gal ask, you know, recently, does it ever get overwhelming? And I thought about that, and I was like, really good question, because I was like, it really comes down to decide you're difficult, right? When I look at most people's lives, they have difficulties in finances, difficulties in health, all these difficulties because they didn't decide to push through the discipline, right? And so in my choice, and as I dialed this in over the last few years, I heard a great analogy of, you know, imagine a fighter pilot. Right, a fighter pilot has a specific checklist before they actually take off and before they land the plane. Why? Their life's on the line, literally, right? Well, in the absence of having a dialed in start into your day and a wind down to your day, like, it's really, your life is on the line by way of, are you just living? Are you living? Are you existing? And so I've dialed mine in. There's actually a couple really good books that I read. One was 5 a.m. Club, which is one of my favorite books of all time. But there's another one, Miracle Morning, and they use this acronym SABER. So I'll just real quick is are you getting silence in the morning? Are you doing affirmations in the morning? Are you visualizing? Exercising, 20 minutes was the key number in that, because again, your cortisol, your stress hormones is the highest it is in the day in the morning. So reducing that, are you reading something positive? And then are you scribing, writing something down? And so I always tell people, there's no exact way for everybody. Play with it yourself. I have dialed mine in specifically to be my best, and I actually measure it on how I track my days. What does a phenomenal day look like? When I get 2 hours and 15 minutes dialed in of giving myself me time, from the visualizations, the affirmation, to my exercises, elliptical, because I can read on the elliptical, so I read 2 birds with 1 stone. When I dial all that in, and back to what you said, cap it off with a cold shower, there's health benefits to cold showers, but I don't even care about that. It's the mentality, right? Because again, if I can do the hard thing in the first thing in the morning, I'm going to do other hard things in the day. I push myself through that. So that's a big, you know, process that I've dialed that in. What I'm curious for you is, obviously you probably had one of the biggest nuances from being a successful entrepreneur and the level of, you know, entrepreneurs, it comes with a level of stress, to being mayor, mm-hmm. right? And obviously during that period of time, that transition of like, life is really good, pretty good, all those type of things, to say now you have a whole plate of stress that you weren't, I'm sure you weren't even anticipating, right? How did that jar you from the unexpected parts of that? And then secondarily, how did you claw back to get balance and then even go on the offensive so you were the best version? I know you're not doing this just for other people. Your family matters the most, your mm-hmm. faith matters the most. How did you go on the offensive to get to tip the scale so make sure that you're taking care of you
yeah.
for those things?
Yeah.
Or in the process of.
Yeah, that's good. I'll tell you what's interesting is, so I'm 5.5 years now into this job, and when I got elected in 2018 and started serving, my back started killing me, my lower back, and I couldn't pinpoint it. And I mean, I did everything, dry needling, physical therapy. I went vegan for 90 days. I mean, I did everything. I got x-rays, I got epidural shots, like, and the MRI was like, dude, your back looks healthy as ever. There's nothing wrong with your back. And the only thing that I could pinpoint was it was just stress. And stress manifests itself in certain ways. Some people get headaches or they get tense in their shoulders or whatnot. Mm-hmm. For me, my back just became a train wreck. And to this day, I'm still struggling with back problems. And so when I think about being done with this job someday, I'm looking forward to hopefully getting my back back. Because yeah. my back has really been a bite. And I know I sound like just a whiny baby right now.
No, no, no.
But my back has killed me since I've been in this job, and I've tried everything, and it's stress. So I've had to learn to manage that stress. It's better, but I think what's worked for me to manage the stress load is three main things. One is I have reconnected. Miracle Morning is a great book, by the way. Not doing all the savers, but a lot of them. One is I found my morning devotion time again. So I've fallen into this routine. I get up about 5 a.m. and then I go work out. And for me, that's either a run. This morning I ran 4 miles. I get back to my garage and it's about 6:15, and I sit in a crusty old lawn chair in my garage, and I have some devotions, 15 minutes. And most recently then I've started cold plunging, where I have an old freezer, bought mm-hmm. a deep freeze from Best Buy, $400, flex sealed the heck out of it in the inside so it's sealed. It's 48 degrees, and I get in that thing. And I listen to this Tibetan monk guy, like just, mm-hmm. and I just focus. And it sucks, man. To your point about cold showers, it's not like I'm not looking forward to getting in that cold tub. Like, oh, I can't wait to get in there and mm-hmm. freeze my butt off for 4 minutes. But it's hard and it sucks. And it's helped me with my mental strength, but also with my back pain. Like it helps with inflammation and other things. And by that time it's 7 o'clock, so as I'm starting my day, my 5 to 7, 4:30 to 7 some days, I've got 2.5 hours in of taking care of myself. Because I know I'm gonna go taking care of everybody else now. The rest of the world's gonna take over at 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. But that time for yourself in the morning when you're doing these things and you're reading, you're in your elliptical and you're boxing and you're dialing in your diet, you just cannot underestimate how important that stuff is. So, and you mentioned a book, like there's a book by Adam Carey Newhoff called At Your Best. And that book talks about your red zone time, your yellow zone time, and your green zone time. And basically no one can be on for 12, 15 hours a day. So like, when are you at your best? Like some people they're night owls, or like, man, 12 to 3 in the afternoon, I can conquer the world. For me, I am at my best 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. Then I move into my yellow zone, which I'm good. I can take some meetings and stuff, but I'm not as sharp as I was in the morning. 3 o'clock after, I'm just gonna do some emails. And if I'm in a meeting, I better just be a passive mm-hmm. participant because I'm not sharp anymore.
Yeah.
And when you can know that about yourself, yeah. like I know when I'm at my best, it's not 12 hours a day, it's this time in the morning. Right. It helps you plan your day.
For me, it's a little bit more event-based. You know, the things that I'm doing, like I said, that give me something back, I'm just naturally more available for, I'm naturally more into. And quite honestly, probably one of my superpowers is not caring about stuff I don't care about. I'm just good at not caring about stuff I don't care about. Like, there's stuff that's like, it's a thing I could do, it's another thing on the list, it's another whatever, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. And not just because I decide not to care, but because I do the math and I prioritize it or whatever, and that's just where it's at. And if I get to it, I get to it, and I do the thing. And so I don't spend a whole lot of time mentally breaking myself down. I don't spend a whole lot of time feeling bad for what I'm not doing. I do a lot of stuff. You know what I'm saying? And quite a bit of it at a really high level. And like, I know that. And so I don't feel weird about that. And what I've just dealing with folks the way we do, I've just come to find that most people's pain is self-inflicted. It just is. You know what I mean? That person who's yelling whatever, they have no idea. You know, though. And when you measure what you do against what you should do or could be doing or would like to do, the distance between those two is always going to be, it's always going to be great. So you just going to find yourself in a situation where you're never enough. And I don't really, if I have one superpower, is really that part of it and that mental piece of it. Because for me, the key to it for me is lasting. You know, I last. I just seen so many people come and go. So many people in social work come and go. So many people in community work come and go. So many people in business come and go because they wanted the thing. They wanted to get it now and because they couldn't preserve themselves. And for me, the ability to get anything you want done, especially the big stuff, that happens over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And if you burn yourself out and you move on other people's clock and you allow yourself just to get beat up by what should or could be happening, you have a tough time making.
So what's one like change or pivot in your life or something you've made that has been most impactful? Like for me, I'll go first and then you tell me what yours is. For me, like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I just decided to start front-ending my day. I didn't stay up till 11 or midnight anymore. I'd go to bed like 10 o'clock and I'd take those 2 hours and I moved into the front of the day. Instead of getting up at 6, I would get up at 4 or 6:30, I'd get up at 4:30. And I would use that time for me because my 10 to midnight time was just garbage time. I mean, I was watching stupid shows and eating some chips. And I thought I was working, you know, laptops open, sitting on the couch, but it was just garbage time. That was transformational for me when I said, no one's a morning person by default. People who say that, it's like, no, they've conditioned themselves to it. Everyone likes to sleep in. Like, that's just, how we're
wired. I do hear about some of those folks that, like, I can't sleep past 5. They wake up out of
bed. I can't really anymore.
And I can't either anymore.
I wish I could. I can sleep till 10 o'clock.
Could you? But I've changed. I've reconditioned my body, my mind, everything to be a morning person, you know? So it's like, it doesn't just happen. You kind of program yourself in that. So that has been transformational for me more than anything else. What's something that's helped your personal like wellness or either you guys like in changing your life? Say, man, when I started doing that, it was really good for my mind or my body or whatever.
I'll go back to it was about the time we were starting Think3D, right? And obviously you're embarking upon, again, I was very disciplined to grind 60 hours a week corporate America. And obviously we're embarking on a whole new journey. And so you recognize again, why we both made the leap from corporate America. And you can go back to some of the ancient philosophers, you know thyself. And as I got to know myself, you recognize, you know, you hear things like you are the average sum total of the 5 closest people you're around. But even beyond that, beyond just the people, the environments, right? Again, how important my environment is from, you know, how things are set up to the social engagements. Again, you get asked to do a lot of things all the time. How are you intentionally building an environment so I don't have to think about it? Again, you look at two guys, we do a lot of stuff from business, community, all the different things. The way that we operate, because people ask all the time, how do you do so much? I've built this life with intention. Now, not everyone has the same freedom per se, but you're gonna see us, we travel a lot, because we go hard to be able to turn off and be able to say, okay, I know I have a vacation this weekend, I'm gonna be heading up to Minneapolis, and at the end of the month, I'm gonna go climb a 14,000 foot mountain in Colorado. Like, I go hard and intentionally design my environment, not just the physical space, but the people I'm around, the things I'm gonna see. I have 5 months left of this year. The rest of my year is planned out in a general sense. So that way, in this week, I can be all in. I'm not focused on tomorrow because I already thought about what kind of, how far do I need to go before I need to get on a plane to get away and spend some time with myself or just unwind. And so now that I know that about myself, I've created environments that allows me to thrive at a high level over a period of time because I know when I'm going to about to hit burnout. Mm-hmm. there's already gonna be something booked. I'm gonna be hopping on a plane. We disconnected. And so setting up my environment holistically with intention has been a game changer for me by way of, again, we've done a lot so far in business. We in the second quarter of what we're going to do, large in part because we've gotten so in tune with what we need individually and set the environment up.
I'm a little more day-to-day with it in terms of I got comfortable with just being myself in front of people. You know what I'm saying? Number one, how I dress, how I come, all those other type of things. Like, that's a whole load of stress. Like, I don't even calculate anymore. People don't appreciate how much that is. And then being able to do things in front of people, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of times people getting up in the morning is based on the premise that is a time you get for yourself. I take my time in front of people, you know what I'm saying? So I live across the street from my office. That's not an accident. Sometimes I just go home for half an hour. I want to be home right now. You know, I live above a coffee shop. I go downstairs and I engage with people. It's one of my favorite things to do. It gives me life. But as soon as I'm done, I go upstairs. And I create, like you said, an environment for those things to work for me. But it's also because for me, what's important for people to know about me is it's like I'm not trying to be a president or a CEO or whatever. I could care less about the constructs of all of this stuff. Don't mean anything to me. It's a reality that I engage with, but I'm trying to be a good person and have a good life. That's what I'm trying to do. These other things facilitate that. You know what I mean? Because when my community's healthy, when my wife is happy and healthy, when my family's happy and healthy, when I resource to a certain level, then I find myself to be able to be at peak happiness. But I'm not trying to do any of this jazz.
Well, and that's a key point there, is because a lot of times people read online or they see this entrepreneur does this and he's so successful because this is his routine and Steve Jobs would do this. It's like, that worked for Steve Jobs.
Find your thing.
Yeah, it's like, good for him. It's like, I'm not doing that, you know?
And so, you don't know what some of these people were actually like to be with.
Right, right.
You know what they accomplished, which is cool.
Yeah. Especially in Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
You know what that was. No one wanted to work for him.
Nobody wanted to work for him. And you don't know what it's like with this person and their kids, this person and their spouse. You don't know what it was like in their minds. You don't know what their experience was. Mm-hmm. And for me, anytime you adopt a process without being considerate of what your actual experience is going to be, you're missing a point. You're working for something you've never had, and you don't even know you really want.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's about enjoying the thing the whole way. I've been poor and to a point right now where we could do a lot of things that the young me never would have thought I would be able to do. I've been happy my whole life, every single part of it. And you could take away every single solitary thing that I had, and I would get it back. Because I didn't even know how the first time. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so I just don't wear that. And for me, like, when I look at people like that, for me, is what allows me to show up consistently the same person that I am all the time and not have it be fake, because I'm authentically who I am. So for me, there's nothing, there's no single thing that a person can do for their health than that. Because can you be happy if you don't think you are? No. So what should you be thinking about?
Well, I think about this about in the world of, we know things are going to happen, right? You see the stats that every 3 to 5 years as adults, we go through some major life event, both positive and negative, right? And anyone who's ever been on a plane knows, they've heard that, you know, the stewardess coming on and say, in the unlikely event that turbulence happens and the oxygen mask drop, you better put yours on first, because you're no good to anybody if you're passed out. Well, the life announcement should be, in the absolute likely event that turbulence is going to happen, you had better have your oxygen mask on first.
Yeah, buddy.
And so how do you go on? We call it good going on offense, right? And starting good with yourself, right? The positive psychology, knowing that the unexpected phone call of a death in your family, or the person coming at you sideways and you thought they were your friend, all the different things that, you know, it's a guarantee to happen at some point. How do you guys go on offense to help make sure that, I don't even call it balance, but just that there's a deposit, right? You have a plus surplus. So when it gets pulled out of, to make sure that you're good for you, yourself, your family, the things that matter the most. So when the unexpected comes, you can make it through the best possible way possible and be good on the other side.
Oh man, that's a great question. And you know what? I don't know if I do a good job of that, other than, you know, when you invest in yourself, hopefully those are deposits you're making in becoming a better person. So whether it be your wellness, whether it be books you're reading, whether it be your faith, you know, for me, investing in my faith and in scripture, and doing that when you don't need it will hopefully be something you can call back on when you do need it, you know? and I'll have built up some kind of resiliency to whatever's going to get thrown at us. But I'll say, I'm probably not a good person to speak to on that, because I don't know if I do a good job of that. And I think that all you can do is prepare, you know, prepare for the worst. And that's just kind of been my philosophy over the last 5 years in this job is, you know, I'm the mayor, we're sitting here right now recording this. We could have a Walmart shooting happen today in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and I could be on the absolute hot seat on news stations all over the country talking about this. And you talk about the burden of leadership, like that's like the stuff I think about all the time. Like that could happen right now and I could get a text here and have to go do that. How do I prepare for that in the likely event that that does happen, to use your phrase? You know, learning from those experiences when stuff like that has happened previously, when we went through COVID, and when you go through those tough times, instead of going through a woe is me kind of season of life and like, oh, things are so tough right now and I wish this was different, saying, what am I learning about myself right now? How can I be better? What, you know, how can I improve? How could I have handled that better than I did? And so you don't make that same mistake the next time.
Yeah. After every bad thing that I perceive to be a bad thing that's happened to me, a good thing happened. And I just know that when that happens, there's a lesson in there for me. I think Socrates, when he was put to death for the way that he thought, or when he was charged with death, you know, he said, I do not fear death because to fear death suggests that I know what it is and that it's bad. You know what I mean? And it's one of those things where a lot of times people are fearful of things and they don't understand. So when something's happening to you, when we think about things on the linear plane of good things or bad things, you don't know if this was a thing that prepared you for the next thing. And so I just tend to think of it that way. And then for me, a lot of times you use the word resilience. A lot of times when people describe resilience to me, because I'm big on language, I'm a real stickler on language. When people talk about resiliency, a lot of times what people are talking about is their ability to endure, right? Their ability, their pain tolerance. Like I'm hanging on to the cliff and I can keep hanging on. But for me, hanging on isn't a much better experience than falling. You know what I mean? It's delaying the inevitable. And short of somebody coming to get you, or you developing strength out of some place for you to be able to get yourself out of that situation, you're gonna be hanging there until you fall. That's just not a great experience to me. For me, resilience is the distance between you and the cliff. And so if you're not driving your life forward, all you're gonna be is hanging on, which means what's one step away from hanging on? Falling. That's not resilience. For me, it's the distance that you create between you and the edge. And for me, I try to create as much distance as possible by building cachet in my relationships, to be cared about, to be loved, to have that cheers vibe when you walk around in your community. That's partly in the investment. That's having my hands on the wheel so I have a clear understanding of what's happening around me and why, and I know how much I can do to affect it. And it's also pushing it forward in terms of knowing what you're working for. You know, knowing what you're doing. People always say that they're working for money, and it's like, you don't care about the money, because if I gave you money and told you you couldn't spend it, you wouldn't want it. You care about what the money does for you. And when you start focusing on the money instead of what it does for you, you're going to get really good at making money, and you're going to be really poor at taking advantage of it. So it's cool that you could take your kids to Disney World. Who cares if they hate your guts? I don't, like, it's just one of those things where, like, I don't care about what I don't care about. And I deeply, deeply care about what I care about.
Yeah. Well, my last thought on just wellness in general, how we can safeguard that, was a book that came out not too long ago called A Good Life. And it's the longest standing study on happiness that exists. Harvard's been studying happiness 80 plus years. And number one, not even like a close one and two, number one, hands down, the number one indicator on your level of happiness in life comes down to the quality of your relationships. Because about two, every 3 to 5 years, some major life event is going to happen. And so what was interesting in the book of the people at the highest spectrum of happiness and the lowest spectrum of happiness had about the same number of life events happening. So it's not about what's happening to you, it's how you go through it. And more importantly, who you have to go through that with. And I think, you know, when I think about my wellness again, this last year has been what you could say is probably the most difficult year I've ever gone through in a lot of ways. And the one thing that has made it, you know, the easiest by way of how to go through something difficult really is, again, Vonnie was my best friend and business partner going into it, but recognizing that you had, like, again, you have other friends and other people in your lives, even family, some people that you kind of question on the other side of it, like, how much do they really care about you? Mm-hmm. Having the strength that I always say, again, I have really two core people in my life at this point. If that's all I had, I'm good. because I know with the right people, I can go through anything, because I don't know what it is, what the next thing is. But again, when you have the right people in your corner that you know you're going through it with, on both sides of having to be resilient and the tough side of things, also to celebrate life with. Again, I look forward to the call. Man, as soon as I hear that, something happened. There's a level of excitement because we're doing life together, right? And so as you think about just that last thought on wellness and protecting yourself, that how has relationships helped both of you in terms of adding I'll call it a cushion to your overall wellness and well-being, whether the people you're doing it for and or the people you're doing it with?
Yeah, I know a lot of times when you say the word wellness, people go right to physical, mm-hmm. you know, mental, but relational wellness, I think, is probably, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's probably one of the most understudied aspects of someone's happiness. And so it's no surprise on that study. I think a lot of people would be surprised that it's not money. Like, oh, so it's not money, it's relationships.
Right, so why
am I chasing this and grinding this?
Right.
I always think of it this way, man. If I came home today and my wife, you know, was, hey, there's a suitcase on the step, and she's like, we're done, who would I call? And that list gets pretty short pretty quick, and you need those people in your life, you know.
Yeah, buddy.
You need Ivana in your life, you know. You need a whoever in your life to say, okay, I'm going to rely on these people to get me through the thick and thin, the up and downs of life. And we got a lot of friends and a lot of relationships, but the deep ones are very rare. And they're very hard to find, but they're very important to our emotional, mental wellness. So I think for me, a theme of this whole discussion, you know, my last word would be this, that taking care of your mind, your body, and your soul is important, but there's like a relationship aspect that's over top of all those things. It's kind of like the umbrella, that without that, none of those things really even matter.
Yeah, I'll sum it up like this. My personal belief and mission statement is to teach people how to love, starting with themselves. And for me, the end all be all is I want to be loved. And I have just found that that is unlikely if I'm not in a room of people who know how to love themselves. And so by loving myself and helping people do the same, I find it that I'm in spaces where I'm generally cared about more often than not. And so that's kind of where I put my energy in. And that's what I need the energy for. And so all of that stuff that we talked about to be well is to do that. And it replenishes, and that's that thing where I want to do things that do things, and I want to invest in things that I love, that love me back.
Yeah. Well, leaders can only show up if and do their job well if they take care of themselves. And so that's wellness. That's the burden of leadership. That's another episode. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, comment, like, do all the things, and we'll be back with another episode soon. For Tammy and Vonnie and PTH, we're out. Thanks, guys.